From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast.
It was a round that made a mockery of even the wisest predictions, so we were largely unaffected. But now the weekend off for fantasy managers brings a chance to take stock. Whether you got burnt by the appearance of sun or caught out by Villa's rain, we've got the Game Week 4 confessions and lessons. It's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast from the Premier League. Hello, fantasy manager. How are you? I'm James Richardson. With me today on the FPL podcast, we've got the FPL family's Sam Bonfield. Hello, Sam.
Hey, James.
Nice to have you on board. Former player and broadcaster Sam Parkin. Still very much current broadcaster, Sam. Sorry, I wasn't implying that your career was already finished.
Thanks, James. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon to you. French football writer Julien Laurens of ESPN and other places too.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Jules. Let's begin by saying congratulations, Sam Parkin and your team, Parkin the Bus, who got the best result of any of us this last weekend. 76 points, Sam.
Yeah, chuffed. And it's nice to be on and not feel inferior to Sam Bonfield or have any bullets of ammunition for Jules to fire at me. He's going to be quite quiet today, you would presume.
I doubt it.
Never quiet.
So you, Sam Parkin, a very fine tally there. You had Callum Wilson, you had Sterling, but above all, you had Ollie Watkins. What a shout.
Yeah, and I saw him the previous week at Fulham, and I thought he looked a little bit, I don't know, not out of sorts, but his touch wasn't in and maybe just getting used to the Premier League. So I did flirt with the idea of taking him out, but I had various surgery to perform elsewhere in my team. So I left him in. And I'm chuffed he did. And he probably could have had five on another day. So considering he will play every week for Dean Smith, he's going to stay exactly where he is.
Brilliant. A hat-trick against Liverpool. Not many people were expecting that. We'll be talking about Villa and how to react to their extraordinary start to the season a little bit later on. But just to run through a little bit other people's scores. Sam Bonfield, you got a respectable 60 points. You were happy with that, were you?
Yeah, I think I was all right with it this week, to be fair. I had Bissouma as my first sub, which was a bit annoying because those 9 points would have come in very handy off the bench, particularly if Podence hadn't started, as I feared he might not for Wolves. But we live and learn, and I still own Harry Kane, so the way he is at the moment, that can only mean points returns going forward.
I see. That's for your team. Best in all the world. Nice. Julien Laurens, whose team's still called Murder on Zidane's Floor, 39 points, Jules. What happened there?
I wish I'd been as lucky as Sam Parkin this week, you know. But I mean, he deserved a bit of luck now and again, I guess. So now it was just when your midfield bring you 8 points all in, you know, all together. It's just not a good week. My stars didn't perform. I never thought that Trent Alexander-Arnold would get -1 for a game like Aston Villa. You know, all due respect to Aston Villa. So it was not a good week.
Well, we will be respecting Villa a little bit later on, as I mentioned. But broadly speaking, how are you reacting to this really bizarre start to the season, obviously this weekend in particular, with the unexpected results? Has it affected the way that you build your team or will be changing your team going forward? Are you going to diversify more and try and get more players from different teams so as to maybe not be affected by these anomalous results? Sam Bonfield.
I think so. I think for me, it's still one of those that we're going to have unusual results this season. It seems like at the beginning of most season we have some defensive issues, and I think this year it's more heightened than it ever has been before. So in terms of spending on the defence, maybe that's not the case, but up top what we've seen is a plethora of, I know Jules had a bad week for his midfielders this week, but generally speaking the midfielders have been performing. Salah's been regularly scoring points, obviously the likes of Son and Kane also, and then we've got this wealth of nice cheap options like Sam have with Ollie Watkins and Callum Wilson, who can really enable you to have real strength of depth in your side. And particularly when you now look at Brewster, having got his move to Sheffield United. So there's a wealth of opportunity up top. And I think you just have to be loyal, stick to the players that you have. If they're not performing for a few weeks, then's the time to move them on. But one kind of blip in results, like we saw with Liverpool against Aston Villa, doesn't mean we necessarily need to boot them out altogether.
I agree with Sam. Also, I think international week or break is always important to look at who or when they play their second game. So it could be 48 hours sometimes before they're due to play in the Premier League. And I think that's, you know, it's huge if you have a South American player who has to travel, for example, which is not always the case. I'm not saying like this month and this week especially, but it's always good to see, you know, where Bruno Fernandes is playing with Portugal or where Paul Pogba is playing for France, and will he play? How long will he play? And I think that after the international breaks, maybe it's not a bad idea to look at players who were not involved in the international break in itself, because they will have more time to rest, obviously less traveling and more training time with their club and with some of the teammates maybe and stuff like that. I think that to keep in mind when you build your team for the following game week now and have a look at who you have and where they play. If they, you know, if Paul Pogba plays three times 90 minutes in the space of 8 days with France, you know, yes, he's going to be really tired for you. So those kind of things, I think, could help you.
Apart from Pogba, is there anyone else who you've got a little mental red flag about in terms of the amount of international fixtures they've got?
This international break, you've got three games for pretty much every big nation. Same with the next one in November, which is very unusual. Usually it's the two Nations League ones. Now they've added a friendly, so, and everybody will play a bit of the friendly, then most of the two Nations League for the big players. So I think it's really important to keep that in mind for De Bruyne, for people like Pogba, Anthony Martial as well. Bruno Fernandes will be involved. Harry Kane, of course, will be involved. Right. I think all of that, keep an eye on all those players.
Martial, who of course will be serving a three-game suspension after the red card he picked up against Spurs in the last round. Meantime, the other question about international, the rest weekends and the 2 weeks that we get really to do transfers is, when do you actually pull the trigger? Do you go early because you're worried about price rises, or do you wait until the very last second because you're concerned that players may pick up injuries on international duty, or in our current situation, maybe pick up even a COVID-19 positive or have to isolate because they've been with a teammate who's had one? Sam, what have you done? Sam Parkin.
I think you have to wait, really. I've got a little bit of money. I think I've got £400,000 to play with. So I'll certainly be waiting and seeing how people come back. And I agree with the two others, really. I think gone are the days where you go heavy on one team. I think there's going to be a much more even spread this season, and you're going to get value from the likes of Southampton and Villa and stuff like that. So a number of these clubs won't even have internationals. So I think we're going to probably be, not so much reacting to the international breaks, because we're going to have the options from your Villas and from your Evertons, not so many top quality internationals are going to be playing so much football.
My side, Hasty Signings FC, for example, I got 56 points, quite reasonable, I thought. The transfer that I was keen to do almost immediately was bring in somebody from Villa, whether it's a Grealish or we'll talk about some of the other options, or a Ross Barkley. The other thing I want to do is my traditional Son transfer, which I haven't done yet this round. But he doesn't have a fixture, as far as I know, with South Korea. Their World Cup qualifiers are postponed because of the health measures over there. Sam Bonfield, I've brought him in or taken him out every week. He was out last week in my version of the Hokey Cokey, and I do want to shake it all about. I'm not the only one. 1.4 million managers got rid of him before that fantastic performance at Old Trafford. Do we have to swallow our pride and bring him back in, or should we practice patience there as well?
No, you should 100% swallow your pride and bring him back in. I bought him out just before the second game week against Southampton when he got that hat trick and the four goals, and it hurt a lot. But I think there are players who hit these beautiful runs of form. And I think pre-season, we all suspected that Spurs' fixture congestion early on might be to the detriment of them as FPL players. But actually what we've seen is it's brought their fitness levels and their reading of the game so far advanced of a lot of the teams that they're playing against. So the likes of Son and Kane are just on fantastic form. And I think if you don't own at least one of them going into game week five and beyond, that's going to hurt you more and more. So, yeah, Son back in, I think, for you this week, James.
One possible question mark about Son and his Spurs teammates is to what extent Gareth Bale's arrival might affect the number of minutes he gets. We'll be talking about the new additions, the players that you're most excited about, listener, and the ones that we are keen to get into our sides and think will be good additions a little bit later on in the show. Next up, though, we're going to take a look at the long view and whether we should be loading up with the likes of Villa and Everton. By the way, if you want to join our FPL podcast mini league, it's wide open right now. The code to use is SMX YTY. Okay, so it's been an unusual start to the season. Is normal service going to be resumed soon? Should the likes of Villa and Everton be places where we're shopping for players? Are they going to continue their fantastic starts? If you have a check on the FDR, the fixture difficulty ranking chart, which is the PremierLeague.com website, or on the app, it gives you a nice indication of their prospects, at least in terms of the games coming up. And both teams do have very favourable fixtures, at least according to the FDR chart, once we come back from the international break. Everton, of course, starting off with the derby at home to Liverpool. But then after that, Southampton and Newcastle, Man United, and Lord knows where they'll be by that point. And then Fulham before welcoming Leeds. We talked about Everton before, but if you haven't got in on Everton, is it the case to get three of the Toffees? What do you think?
I wouldn't be going in with three just yet, probably with that Merseyside derby on the horizon, but I want to get Rodriguez into my team, undoubtedly, and someone that I think I'd stick with throughout the campaign. I think he's going to be that valuable. And just a little comparison, think back to Fernandez's impact at Manchester United last season. His first four games, a goal and two assists. Rodriguez, three goals and two assists in his four first Premier League games. Only De Bruyne and Salah had more shots. He's created the most big chances. I think you could tell from that performance at the new Tottenham Stadium when he just ran that game, really. So he's someone I'd certainly want to get in. And maybe a little bit of a curveball to go alongside that. You've got, obviously, Calvert-Lewin. You've got Richarlison. Dina's always fantasy football gold as well. But I think Jerry Mina, they may be going to ship a few goals, but considering that relationship Rodriguez and Mina have had for the international side, if you think back to 2018 World Cup, he certainly provides assists, and he is a real goal scorer in centre-half. Mina obviously got off the mark the other day against Brighton, and he's someone I think will get goals from set pieces for them.
Does he not pick up a lot of cards as well, Sam?
Potentially, he's a little bit rash, but I think given that he's the biggest goal scoring threat and the delivery you get from Dina as well, I think he's not a bad option if you're going to go in on an Everton defender.
My fear about Rodriguez is that he seems to me to do a lot of assisting the assist when Richarlison's on the pitch. Once Richarlison went off on in game week four, he had much more license to go forward, and then as a result got in on all of the FPL points that game week. And I think, you know, to go from having, you know, kind of getting a six-pointer-ish to getting an 18-pointer with two goals and an assist in that game on the back of Richarlison leaving worries me a little bit as an FPL manager, because Richarlison, you would think, is going to start every week if he's fit. And therefore, does that mean that Rodriguez holds back a little bit? And it's Calvert-Lewin and it's Richarlison that goes. So for me, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is still the one I would go to at Everton, although I can see the appeal of the slightly, because he's a different position, because he's a midfielder, I can see the appeal of going for James Rodriguez.
I mean, for me, the of all those Everton players, I think Calvert-Lewin is the most interesting one, because I expected him to maybe not do so well in game week four. I thought he started so well, but there was a point where maybe he would not have the efficiency that he showed in the first 3 weeks of the season and actually in the League Cup, and actually he still scored, you know, didn't get maybe as many points as before. But so he's the one I'd be tempted to bring in the most. I just think that the deliveries are so good coming from everywhere, a bit like what Sam was saying, from Ding or James. I mean, even Andre Gomes, really, he didn't play in game week four, but when he's there, it must be a pleasure to play as a centre forward with him behind you. So I can see Calvert-Lewin keeping his goal scoring streak. So maybe I'll bring him in for next week.
Okay. The message I'm getting is at least two Everton players, and make Dominic Calvert-Lewin one of them. What about Aston Villa, though? Because tricky fixtures to start the season. They've flown past them. Only conceded goals so far to Liverpool. Coming up, they've got Leicester away, then Leeds at home, Southampton at home, Arsenal away, Brighton at home, and then West Ham away. But they're kind of playing like they're fixture-proof anyway. Grealish is on fire. 24 points this last game week. Ross Barkley has been an extraordinary addition as well. And Ollie Watkins, as Sam was mentioning. Then you've got options like Konsa at the back and Tyrone Mings. How many Villa players should I get in?
I really rate Aston Villa at the moment. I think they were one of those teams that are beautiful differentials at the moment because nobody really owned them going into the season as they had a blank in game week one. You might have had Keenan Davis on the bench, but other than that, you didn't own a Villa asset. So they're still very low ownership. I think Grealish is the most currently at 14.3% owned. So even that is nice differential territory, really. And last season, Aston Villa just weren't on good form. There was a lot of negativity in terms of where they were in the league. There was a lot of kind of uncertainty about Grealish's future. This year, that's settled down. They've started the season with a bang. They've brought in some fantastic players, none least in the new goalkeeper. I think that strength in the keeper position has really spurred the team on. And defensively, they look a lot more solid at a time where the rest of the league certainly don't look defensively solid. So for me, Aston Villa are really good options. Like you were mentioning, you know, Grealish is obviously one, but McGinn looked fantastic in that game against Liverpool. Ollie Watkins is a fantastic player. And I actually already brought him in on the back of that performance because I'm looking at Aston Villa thinking that that's a really, really nice option at 5.9 million. Sorry, he's a super cheap option too, and the fixtures look lovely.
Yeah, I agree. I think the signings they've made to strengthen in the areas they were weak last season, the striker was the missing part of the jigsaw. So to get Watkins and the goalkeeper, I think was a problem area. And I think Matty Cash is not a bad option. The right back, he's a converted winger, so £5 million. 3 goals, 8 assists, granted in the Championship last season. But if you compare that to the likes of Dina, Chilwell, who are a lot more expensive. Dina with 7 assists last year. Chilwell, 3 assists, 3 goals. I think that he's going to be flying forward, providing opportunities. And they've shown that they can keep clean sheets too in the first 4 games. So potential returns from him, I would say.
And for me, it's Ross Barkley. I mean, he's only owned by 0.8% because he was never playing for Chelsea anyway, is 5.9 million. And I think what we saw already against Liverpool in a game that suited him really well because of the highland that Liverpool played and the way they played, and it might not always be like that. However, I still think that even against a team that would sit deep, for example, he would create things. He's such an amazing creative player to have in your team, and you see already his relationship with Grealish. I think if he can get a bit more clinical in front of goals, because he could easily have had a hat-trick against Liverpool. But I think that would come as well with match fitness, because, again, he hadn't played regularly really for the last 2 years between the injuries and the fact that there were other players at Chelsea. I think once he's properly match fit, he could be an incredible asset to have in your team.
At the top of the FDR chart are actually Crystal Palace, with Fulham right behind them, and then Man United. Given the form of those sides, would you be tempted by... Are you still being swayed by fixtures at the moment, or the way that the results have been so unexpected, are you actually not paying it as much attention as previously?
I think we've got to kind of throw that out the window a little bit. I just think that there seems to be a lack of focus maybe without the crowds. I think you can understand that maybe the players are not completely focused on their football, considering everything that's going on outside. The lack of preparation maybe between games as well. So I think it's so difficult to predict. And that's why I'm going to be, you know, plucking some of these players maybe from a little bit of obscurity and hoping that these results continue,
this
trend
Fulham?
Continues.
Do you mean Craven Cottage?
maybe. I'd like the signing of Lookman. And I think Loftus-Cheek is a brilliant bit of business. We'll probably come on to that. But that's him required to stay fit, which he's not been able to do. But he showed at Crystal Palace when he played frequently that he could be a really good asset. I think for Palace, I'm just waiting to see if Roy Hodgson's going to continue being so offensive. I never thought I'd see a Roy Hodgson team with 2 wingers and 2 strikers. Normally he likes to play a central midfielder tucked in on one of the sides. So I think considering the defeat against Chelsea, that's something to keep an eye on. And he's got Kiarte at centre-half. He could move back into midfield to allow Scott Dan to come back in. So I just think, yes, Roy's bought some offensive players, the likes of Eze, but maybe he'll revert to type now they've had an indifferent result.
Well, as you say, Sam, very shortly we'll be talking about some of the players picked up on transfer deadline day and asking you which deadline day signing is going to come straight into your team. Wednesday's Twitter question was, which transfer deadline day signing comes straight into your team? Let's get some answers. Tron says Cavani. 8 million is very fair for an experienced striker playing for a big club like Man United. Jaden says James Rodriguez has the value. Obviously not a deadline day signing, but still, I'm expecting big things from him. Engin says Alexander-Arnold out, Alex Telles in, rocket. Fred, Telles and Cavani straight into my team. And Eki says probably Telles because he's so offensive and exactly what United is lacking right now. Brilliant. Well, let's just get your reaction to those before I ask you which players you guys are bringing in. First of all, Jules, Alex Telles is a player you're really keen to make a move for as well.
Yeah, I think it's just a no-brainer. I'd be like some of the listeners I've just mentioned, because he's so attacking. You know, he got an incredible amount of goals and assists last season for Porto. I don't think he will take penalties because Bruno Fernandes is there at United, but certainly some of the free kicks, wide free kicks, corners, for sure. He's got an incredible left foot, and don't expect him to get you too many points by not conceding goals, but certainly for making some or scoring some, I think he could have a really good return. So for £5.5 million, I think it's really worth looking into him if you have the money or if you want to bring him into your defence.
Yeah, I think sometimes you don't want to pull the trigger too early, but I think in this guy's case, I have to credit Jack Lang, who's in our team, who's written an article in this morning. 26 goals in his four seasons at Porto, more than 50 assists. So that means he's directly involved in the goal every 210 minutes, which is just incredible for someone who plays as a fullback. 11 goals and 8 assists last season. And as Jules says, potential to take penalties, obviously got great delivery and scores some absolute amazing goals from long range. So he's someone I would imagine the next 2 weeks people will probably just get in, especially considering maybe the form of Luke Shaw in the first few weeks of the season.
All right. What price is he at the moment? 5.5 million.
That's right.
So he's not cheap as a new defender, but when you think of his attacking potential and also the kind of players who are going to be there to get on the end of any crosses and balls he can put in, then he does look like a real prospect. One of those players, of course, is Edinson Cavani, who's now arrived at Old Trafford as well. 8 million for him. Tron says that's a very fair price. Jules, you've seen a lot of Cavani, although not as much as Cavani would have liked, because he wasn't getting into the team latterly that much. What do you think? Is he still the player that we remember from, say, his early days at PSG or Napoli before?
Yeah, I think so. I think even if he's 33, the only question mark I have, and I think it's a really fair one, is about his fitness, because he hasn't played since February. He hasn't trained properly with a team, you know, a proper training session since February as well. He's kept fit, but on his own, first in Uruguay, then in Paris, where he was the last few weeks. Now he's in quarantine and won't be able to train either during this international break with his new teammates and the team. So I don't know when he will be able to make his debut. I don't know how fit he will be from the beginning. I don't know how long it will take him at his age to get to full match fitness and to get in the rhythm again. And that's the question mark I have. And that's why I would not bring him straight in, because I don't think he will play for the first couple of games, maybe, or at least not lots. But other than that, you know, if he hits the ground running, he's an incredible finisher, but he needs the team around him to perform well, because that's all he does. He finishes chances. You know, he doesn't take part in a game. He won't give you assists. He would just finish the chances that are created for him. And if the team doesn't perform around him and doesn't create enough for him, then it could easily be completely anonymous, which we've seen before, even in Paris against the big team when PSG were not at their best. So I think it's quite fascinating to see how he adapts and how well he will do. But I think there's a fair question mark over his fitness and how long it will take him to get back to full fitness.
Cavani, and you're not having any. Yes. Sam Bonfield, which new signing did you think, yes, must get them in?
So for me, I'm going for the much cheaper end of the market and looking at Brewster, who's gone to Sheffield United from Liverpool. For me, this is a gift to us as FPL managers. Sheffield United has scored one goal in the opening four games. They have just looked nothing in front of goal so far this season. And Brewster, having been out on loan last season at Swansea with 11 goals in 22 matches, looks like being the perfect fit there. And for us as FPL managers at 4.5 million, he is going to add so much value to the rest of our team. He's also likely to start. Ward has already said that he's going to make his debut against Fulham after international break. So we can be certain, if we're on a wild card, that we can bring him in knowing he's going to play in that game. And what nicer game is there to play than against Fulham, who we've seen so far this season have been incredibly leaky at the back, conceding a lot of goals. He's also one of those players that will just take a shot whenever it comes. And as a result of that, we would expect there to be some bonus points for him as well because of the high level of shots on target that hopefully he's going to get.
But do you think Sheffield United create enough? Because they haven't scored goals, but it's also maybe because they don't have enough creative players, enough creativity in their team, even if they play with wing-backs. If you look at Ollie Watkins in that game against Liverpool, for a player who was also in the Championship last year, who scored more than Brewster, but similar kind of experience, let's say, he has incredible players to serve him between Trezeguet and Grealish and Barkley. I'm not sure who at Sheffield United will create the chances for Brewster, and that's why I'm a bit... I'm not sceptical. I completely agree with everything you said, especially the price. I just don't know if they've got enough creativity in their team to enable Brewster to start scoring and give you points.
I think you're right in some ways. I mean, they've got the likes of Fleck and Lindstrom who have that creativity, and we saw that last season. They're not the most creative team in the Premier League, that is for sure. But equally, at that price point, for the number of goals that he can potentially return over the course of the season, and he is a player that will just take any shot that comes to him. So any slight chance, he'll have a pop at it. And I think that's something that Sheffield United have been missing. They've kind of been waiting for these perfect moments to score goals. And in a team that lacks some creativity in the middle, they don't come around very often. So I think with Brewster there now, it could just offer them a new dimension to their game and a new opportunity for us as FPL managers to go with three proper strikers up top and have, you know, Brewster is a cheap one who you're quite happy to have sit on your bench some weeks, but equally can play in these games like in game week 5 against Fulham. But it also then means that you've got that spare kind of at least 1.5 to get to the next bracket of £6 million. Strikers that you can spend on all of these other expensive new additions, you know, like Gareth Bale or Cavani that we've already spoken about, who you might want to own as well.
Okay, Gareth Bale, 9.5 million if you want a piece of that. Would you get him? And what do you think is going to be the impact on the other kind of attacking midfield options that Spurs already have?
Will I get him? I would love nothing more than to have...
You're tempted.
Harry...
We can tell you're tempted. You can tell.
It's more than tempted, Jules. It's one of those that as soon as Gareth Bale is back properly fit, Gareth Bale and Harry Kane in my fantasy team feels like it's destined to happen. Where will he play? I don't think he will have any impact on Kane or Son. I think in an ideal world, Mourinho will want to play the three of them together as a strike force to be reckoned with across the Premier League. It might have an impact if you're a Moura owner, for example, because I would expect that it's going to be those peripheral guys that miss out. But for me, Gareth Bale just hasn't played enough minutes recently, you know, during his spell at Real Madrid last season. And obviously, he's had this injury coming into Spurs. Now, he is back in full training. There's been some lovely photographs of him this week, full of smiles on the Spurs training ground. So hopefully, come the game against West Ham in game week 5, he will be available to play some part in that game.
Okay, and then we'll wait and see how fit he is, how much of an impact he
Absolutely.
Makes. But wait and see, very much the key words are there. Okay, one or two others to mention. Reguilon also at Spurs, who much like Tellez, seems like a really interesting attacking addition coming out of defence, whether he's somebody you're looking to get in. Also, what impact do you think Thomas Partey, who's not necessarily an FPL asset in himself, but what impact he's going to make on defensive options for Arsenal and indeed any Arsenal players you might be considering, given the way he's probably going to solidify their midfield and reinforce them defensively?
I think it's a very interesting case in the sense that he was obviously playing in a very defensive team, Atletico Madrid, and I think coming in the Premier League and playing in this Arsenal team, he can sort of unleash more his attacking talent, if you want, because I think in terms of ball progression, even in ball retention, I think he could be very good. He could create chances, he could even score goals if you allow him to, and if you play a bit higher up on the pitch than what he did at Atletico Madrid. I don't know how Arteta has planned to integrate him in the team, but again, he's aware with his with Ghana, so he would come back really late. I don't think he would be involved in game. I would be very surprised if he goes straight into the team in game week 5, for example. I would wait a little bit, especially that they play City first in game week 5 away, then Leicester, then United. They're tough games to bring in someone like Partey straight in after hardly not train, I guess. So maybe just wait a little bit on Partey. However, I think further down the line, it could be very interesting to have in your team.
Okay. And Sam Parkin, you mentioned Ruben Loftus-Cheek. Is he somebody you've already made a move for for game week 5? And are there any other of the slightly more niche arrivals that you want to flag up?
Loftus-Cheek, I think, just would fit into the Fulham system. I think they've been lacking kind of goals from midfield. I think Tom Cairney, I wouldn't say days are numbered, but I think he plays different roles now. He's not as offensive as he once was. So I think he could either play as a 10 or as a number 8, Loftus-Cheek. And if he could recapture that form, even from the 18-19 season, where I think he scored 10 goals in all competitions for Chelsea, granted some of them in the Europa League. But I think if he can stay fit, at his price of 5.9 million, I think you could get a decent return. I'm quite interested in the Wolves signings. I think, obviously, they shipped those goals at West Ham, but I think defensively, normally, they get things right in the system with a back three and the wing back. So I think Semedo, moving forward, could be someone that I'd look at. Signed from Barcelona. Obviously, hasn't played the entirety of the last couple of games, maybe a little bit short on fitness. And it's going to be interesting who comes in at left wing back, because they've let Vinagre go and they've signed a young player from Angers. I think that's how you say it.
Angers.
Rayan Aitnouli, who's come in, only 19 years old. But I think those wing backs normally guarantee you returns at Wolves. So I'm just... I think Romain Saiz has been playing left wing back the last few weeks, and I think he's obviously been there a while. He's someone who can get you a good amount of points, but I'd just be interested to see who fills those wing back roles moving forward.
Well, Jules, let's get your reaction to that, not least Sam's suggestion that Semedo is a player worth investing money in. Jules.
Yeah, I mean, for the one who follow me on social media, you know how much I don't really rate Nelson Semedo. However, this is a system and formation that suits him far more than just the back four of Barcelona and the way Barcelona are playing. So he might, going forward, be an interesting asset to have. On the other hand, on the left-hand side, I think in Rayan Aitnouri, the young French left-back, they signed an incredible player, really, really talented player. Great coup. I mean, you can guess why he went there, of course, because of who his agent is. But still, for Wolves, I think it's a great signing. And if he's only 19, but if he is really fit, because he played every game pretty much with Angers this season, he played in a 6-1 defeat at PSG on Friday. So he's match fit, there's no problem. And if he comes in and plays straight away, I really believe in that position, in the way Wolves are playing, that he can bring you a lot of points going forward because he's that good offensively.
Jules, how much does he cost you?
It's £5 million, James. And I think, again, I know he's unproven in the Premier League and he's very young, but trust me, he's really, really talented. And I think at that price, it's someone you should consider.
Well, plenty of players for us to be pondering over then as the rest weekend rolls around. Let's finish off today by asking which players you've actually signed or think you're going to sign for game week 5 in about 10 days' time. Jules, you first.
So my first one is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. I'm running a bit out of patience and seeing that Arsenal are playing Man City away, Leicester, and then United away in the next 3 games. I'm not sure. He's so expensive that when he doesn't bring you any points, then you know you're a bit frustrated. And I think I'm really tempted to swap him for Son or Salah. And then my second one would be Ross Barkley, as I mentioned earlier. I think this one is a no-brainer, especially with Aston Villa's form and their games going forward.
2 free transfers for Jules. Very nice indeed. Sam Parkin, what are you up to?
Well, I've tried to take Sam Bonfield's advice and hold on to my wild cards for as long as I can. And despite that wonderful week last week, I've got a number of players that aren't playing. I've got Reece James. I've got Doherty, who obviously Mourinho preferred Aurier in that role, and he scored the other day. So even though I had that great week, it needs some surgery. So I am thinking about doing the wild card over international break. And I've made this little list of 5 guys that I just want in the team straight off. And I think Salah, Kane, Fernandes, Grealish, Rodriguez, there's my 5. And I think financially I can just about do it with keeping the likes of Ollie Watkins and Callum Wilson that have done so wonderfully well for me. And then it's going to be about getting those really differentials defensively, the really cheap defenders for them, the likes of Southampton, Brighton, etc. So I think it can be done. And that's what I'm going to be mulling over the next 10 days or so.
Don't take too long, because if you are going to wildcard, then you kind of want to do it as soon as possible so that you don't get caught out by price changes, because with a wild card, that's not a risk you run. If anybody does then get knocked out because of COVID or injury, you can just make another transfer. But exciting times for you and parking the bus, Sam. Sam Bonfield, what have you got cooking?
Well, I'm actually quite jealous now of listening to Sam's kind of wish list of players, because that sounds like, to be fair, this is the ideal time, I think, for a wild card. This international break or the one in November feels like a really good opportunity to play it. And I've kind of toyed with the idea of playing mine, but I think I've still got a couple of weeks in my team of kind of being okay before we go that far. I've already made one transfer. I rage transferred Shay Adams out after yet another nothing performance from him in game week 4, and brought in Ollie Watkins on the back of his heroics against Liverpool. Mostly because the price changes looked like they were going to happen. One looked like he was going to go up, the other one looked like he was going to go down, and I didn't want to be priced out of that. So I did that transfer already. I'm not opposed to taking a minus 4. I still might do that. There's a couple of players in my team that kind of could move. So I still have Keenan Davis as my cheap option up top, and I think I'm likely to swap him to Brewster at Sheffield United. Whether I do that this week for a minus 4 or whether I wait for my wild card, I'm not quite sure yet. But I'm still going to keep the likes of Kane and Salah. And I think my big hitters are the ones that are the right ones to be on. I've got a lot of penalty takers in my team, and that always feels like a sensible idea right now.
Okay. All very interesting. We'll be back with another show next Thursday, when we will be in full counting down to deadline mode, with game week 5 fast approaching by then. In the meantime, if you'd like some more FPL content, there's loads of articles by The Scout over at PremierLeague.com. And of course, you can find there the FPL show, which will be running as per usual this week. But for now, that wraps it up for this edition of the FPL podcast. Many thanks to Sam Bonfield Parkin and Julian Laurence. Bye.
Bye, James.
Yeah, James. Thanks. Thanks, Dan. Bye.
And thank you, FPL manager at home. Do enjoy your weekend off, and we'll see you next Thursday.